Hi, and welcome to Prosody, 90.5 FM's weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. I'm Lauren Wolf, guest host of Prosody, and my guest today is the poet Sarah Marcus. Sarah Marcus is the author of Backcountry, 2013 Finishing Line Press, and Every Bird to You, 2013 Crisis Chronicles Press. Her other work has appeared in the Huffington Post, McSweeney's, Cimarron Review, Calyx Journal, Spork, and Luna Luna, among others. She is the editor at Gazing Grain Press and a spirited count coordinator for VIDA, Women in Literary Arts. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
It's nice to have you.
It's so nice to be here.
Can you begin by reading us some poems?
Sure. I'm going to begin by reading some poems about bears. This one is called We Visit the Grizzlies. At the zoo, we're against the glass. Together, a twisted mirror of becoming more ourselves and less the animals inside us. We hero our way through the pine. If I could zipper your fur into my skin, all the human, the smell rubbed off in the moment before the moment, when the pasture bursts with silvery lupine, the rain or your knotted hair, violent in a mean mountain wind. One day, when I can believe the things you tell me, when you no longer feel obligated, when we are permanent as rock, we will be blood and we won't even have to cut our hands open, press them together, you growling tighter, I'll always want you tighter. This next one is called Bears on the Coastline. We bring ourselves to the sea. Every color comes from brown returns, and sometimes the wind is so violent that I could say anything. I walk to the edge of the water so that I won't talk about the future. I walk to the bears so I won't say we are nothing without this beach. The bears, the sand, is the only thing keeping me quiet. When you meet me at the skirt, this crust of earth, and my heart lifts with the Arctic turns when you say, I love, and I watch the turns plummet, bullets unloading into sharp water, being here. A real bear when everything is always so sorry. In the morning, in the cabin, our open window facing the sea, sun on the small of my back, you saying, I cannot waste this wetness. This one's called People Have Always Known Bears. You said you were afraid of bears. We weren't safe until there was ice along the shoreline. I said we all need trauma, and my heart breaks every autumn, so we broke ourselves against those rocks until the cave mouth opened. A womb for blind crayfish, a passageway harboring beetles. I want you to reach into the depths of your backwoods and remember our winters. We need the bears, ourselves, ursine, sleeping in dens. The caverns drip-stoned and stunning. I was and still am in search of a great bear. Because people have always known bears, we will always be shelter for each other. When we first met, I told you that a long time ago, grizzlies came down from the Rockies, how they were poisoned on the range, trapped, hounded, shut out. We found cranial fragments. We still listen to those legends of bounties paid to mountain men harboring that ancient fear. The bears that made meat of us, boar and sow, mauled and gnawed away our bones in the cave. Because you were born to hunt, and I was born of hunting, a witness of great fires. And this one is from my chapbook, Backcountry. It's the last poem in it. It's called But Mostly They Were Bears. We linger near the mouths of caves, track footprints till dusk descends. People have followed these trails for thousands of years, and from you all I want is a few words. I am rock sheltered between you and the carvings that read me to sleep, and I dream of following the bears across continents, the way we've lived together pretending as if the land bridge isn't long gone. A skinned bear looks like a human corpse. I am as much bear as you are. If we don't make it down, I want you to make sure our bones are interred together in the same grave. I want you to tell them I was a bear and I am laid with bears, and you were the one strapped with meat, so pregnant you crawled back.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Sarah Marcus. So Sarah, what's the fascination with bears? Where does that come from?
I think that they're the only North American land predator that we still harbor sincere fear of, and I think there's something kind of mystical and magical about them.
Do you see the bears in those poems as sort of a metaphor for something else?
That's a really good question. You know, I think that they represent the side of us that is fierce and also endangered at the same time. I think in my poems, the line between bear and human is very thin.
Right, I noticed that. I noticed that there's this juxtaposition between sometimes wanting to be the bear and then sometimes sort of embodying the bear, and then also playing with language about verbs, you know, to bear, that kind of thing. So do you find this sort of like an ongoing obsession that you have with bears?
Absolutely. Whenever somebody writes a bear poem, I find it coming my way. I love how the idea that we could become something else when being too human is uncomfortable, or when we kind of want to shed our limitations. I like thinking about the bear being able to embody that.
That's interesting. Can you read us some more poems?
Yes. This one is called Sisters, and it's for my sister Michelle. 1. His sister, who hates the name Sarah, says all the worst people are named Sarah. 2. Sarah cried and laughed Isaac into this place, and before that she said, "Go to my maid Hagar," and something about knees, said she's sick of this desert, all the sandy mouths spitting, the sand where she leaves her womb and wolves come to tear it up. One wolf has Sarah's arm, Hagar watches from a safe distance. 3. Sister sounds like Los Angeles, you, my sweet little sister, the fault lines. Sister, did you know I had an earthquake in Virginia? Virginia sounds like the sister I wanted to be. Sounds like, sister, the meth made me mean. Sister, I held you against the wall. Sister, choking sister, we were so young. A sister protects a sister who cut her up, cut her straight through until the windows were all closed that night. Sister, like smoking, like I'm yellow for you still. 4. Sarah, who crawls on her belly for the abortion in the name of him, and sick because Sarah is how we have sons, our sons who hold us down, who cover our mouths, who tear open our legs. 5. And like a strong sister, you do it without me, and you are the daughter sister, and I am the daughter. Sister, and you are the one who knew about all the blankets, the water wetting his lips, the hospital waiting sister, then the graceful sister, while this awkward sister sat cramped in the difficult window frame, watching you, sweet sister, sweet woman, holding the people who need holding. 6. She was taken to the house of her husband to consummate the marriage. Between one and the other, the sin was committed. Deuteronomy prescribes that a woman who lies about her virginity must be brought to the door of her father's house. Here, the men of her city will stone her with stones that she die. This is a disgraceful sister, harlot in her father's house, Israel's whore. They put evil away from among you. 7. Somewhere the sinking creek loses its water. Follow it to the lost river. We will switch back through the pines until we fold in on ourselves, until our curves are deep enough for swimming. 8. A sister says, Sarah, it was winter, a snow bridge and the sister's sweater that some sister stole. Whose sweater? Whose breasts are these? They are found in the shallows, the slack water where a stagnant sister stands. It was the slick rock that took her, spread over the place, holding us together. An altitudinal snow line crossed us where something died. Sister, in the bottom of a starved basin, sister, the still water is for you. This one is called No Children. Family in the other room quietly discussing who will give dad a kidney. The old house shadowed by trees, The bending begins, windows still spotted from the night's cold rain. All I can do is scrub the kitchen, eyes burning with citrus. My sister says we should move him to the sea, where it's peaceful, where she lives. My father will never leave. The sea is just another desert. My sister and I drive downtown. Cleveland is one big hospital, a series of parking lots and dark roads decaying. Being here breaks my heart. I imagine things in black and white because it's sadder. When people talk about Cleveland, people who love it, people who decamped to the suburbs, they use words like rebirth and revival. We try to have dinner with old friends. We catch each other up on almost weddings and coming back homes. What our parents did to us, we say, look how incredible we are despite them. We laugh and nod. I touch my face and remember the hurt of those days, but don't dare say it. I look at my sister, touch her shoulder, and say, we will be better parents, and are you still dating him? I wish it was summer. Mother's porch is paradise. Flowers, tomatoes, squash, peppers, wicker tables, rocking chairs. Outside, winter takes another tree, holding space for a sacrifice we haven't made yet.
If you've just tuned in, you're listening to Prosody. I'm Lauren Wolf, and my guest today is the poet Sarah Marcus. So Sarah, I'm really interested in this creation of sectioned poems. So how do you negotiate that when you're drafting or revising?
Wow, I think I try and wait for what feels maybe like a natural pause, not necessarily in subject matter, but in language. So I don't know, I think it's a natural rhythm. And then when looking back and making final decisions, I look and see where the subject matter feels like it's departing a bit. So I guess it's two-pronged in that way.
Do you go in with the intention of making a sectioned poem, or do you just let that sort of happen?
Never. It's funny. It happens a lot, but I never go in with that intention. It's almost like it helps me put things into place.
Sort of like different compartments.
Yes.
So, yeah, I know. Well, sectioned poems, I think, are challenging to write, to figure out how to negotiate. When do we break, or what's the added layer that we want to put in here? So in that sister's poem, you had the added layer of sort of like biblical allusions going on. Was that sort of a conscious choice, or did that just happen?
Yeah, I think that was the most conscious choice of that poem. I think the language is organic in a lot of ways, but we come from a very strong Jewish family, and I'm constantly thinking about religion and how that ties into our everyday lives, and certainly how it impacts us as women and as sisters. And so I very much wanted it to be a part of the poem.
That's cool. In that No Children poem, or just in general in your work, what I really like is sort of this connection to humanity, like this universal truth that exists in all of us. Things like, I imagine things in black and white because it's sadder, or holding the people who need holding. And then in that poem that you read in the beginning, talking about how we all need trauma. So how do you craft those kind of universal statements? Does the poems hinge on that?
That's a great question. I think I'm constantly aware of accessibility, and I think the things that are the most beautiful are usually the simplest, and when I'm trying really hard to write something fabulous and fantastic, it's usually terrible, and it's usually when I hear something that is maybe mundane or everyday, it just feels right.
Right. That makes a lot of sense, because I feel like I have that problem in my own work. Like, I'm trying to be poetic.
And, sure.
And how can I just say it so that everybody feels it? And I really appreciate that about your work.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Can you read some more poems?
Yes. This is called Mother and Agada. And an Agada is Jewish oral tradition. Each section, there's three, they start with a quote. This is one. An unborn baby has its eyes open and can look out through the walls of the mother's stomach like a frog in a jar, Margaret Atwood surfacing. She strokes my hair and says, "Maybe you were put on this earth for your mother." There is a story, a stream, and the scorpion asks the frog for a ride across. "I can't," the frog says, "you're a scorpion." "It won't hurt you," the scorpion says, "because I need you to get across the stream. If I sting you, we both drown." So the frog lets the scorpion get on her back. She swims hard against the current. They almost make it to shore when the scorpion stings her. The frog looks back to ask why, says as they begin to sink, "Because I'm a scorpion." 2. Probably there is nothing in human nature more resonant with charges than the flow of energy between two biologically alike bodies, one of which has lain in amniotic bliss inside the other, one of which has labored to give birth to the other. The materials are here for the deepest mutuality and the most painful estrangement. Adrian Rich of Woman Born. 2 days after I called off the wedding, my mother needs to talk to me. Kirsten had driven up from Louisville that morning, the three of us at the kitchen table, my mother drinking scotch, my face swollen with grief, Kirsten's hand on mine. "There are some things I need to say to you," she says. "The heaviness of being in this circle, crueler than giving the ring back. Your life," she continues crying, "it doesn't have to be so painful." I ask her if this can wait, if she thinks this is a good time for her to get some things off her chest. I see Kirsa's lips part in shock at my composure, but it's just loss. "I'm worried about you, your life, your ability to, the men you choose. It doesn't have to be this hard." I have to stop myself from bursting into laughter. My mother drunk crying. From the table, I can see into the living room, the picture of the old Hasidic man who is in deep prayer, covered in the privacy of his tallit. I make eye contact with my father, who is drying dishes in the corner. I smirk. This scares him. He leaves the kitchen. There's fruit painted on my mother's kitchen table, apples and pears and grapes, connected by a green vine that I trace with my finger. The same green is painted as Venetian plaster on the walls. There are 3 still life paintings, also of fruit, hanging behind my mother. The ice in her scotch has melted. Kirsa's hand is a darker shade of olive than mine. She has small fingers. They are cool on top of my burning hand. I tell my mother that she's hurting me, that I'm feeling angry. She becomes more hysterical. "Do you want me to lie to you? I just love you so much." Kirsa squeezes my hand hard. "Why are you doing this to me? I just want you to be okay." In the dining room adjacent to the kitchen, my mother has displayed grandmother's teacup collection in a beautiful antique cabinet. I want to hold one of the cups. Grandmother used to mix blackberry and bergamot. I try to remember the smell. Kirsten lost her mother to cancer when she was 10. Motherless is without protection. Unparented. Not having, which is worse. I walk to the sink to bring my mother a glass of water. "Drink this," I say. Kirsa's hand still in mine. We leave in absence. 3. Because a woman's body is a grave, it will accept anything. Louise Glick. No one is sadder than you. My sister calls and I say, "We all have a choice. You taught her this guilt." When I was 8, I stole cigarettes from your purse, Virginia Slims, long, thin menthols. At night, on the roof, smoke wafting into your open window. They weren't yours, you said. A friend had left them there. A friend replaced them. I grew bolder, took entire cartons. You wanted to say something, your eyes. One night, your hand reached through the open window, pulled me off of the roof, and said, "One of us has to leave."
So, Sarah, I'm interested in sort of how you negotiate writing about family.
Yeah, It's difficult. You never want to hurt anybody's feelings, but there's a desire to, truth telling is kind of overdoing it since it's a poem, and there's certainly a lot of aspects that aren't true, but I think the desire to get a story out is very strong, and so that usually wins over at the end of the day for me.
Right. It's tough because you have to worry about people reading your work eventually and things of that nature. So I always feel like, well, this is your story too. You know, you have ownership in some of it, so why not tell it?
Sure. I think that, my poor family, they've come to terms with the fact that while based on things that are very true, all of my poems are fictionalized in some way or another just to make them feel organic. It's interesting that we need fiction to make something feel organic, actually.
I think it frees us up a little bit. Do they understand that some of it's fictionalized? Because I know that's hard to explain to people that aren't poets.
I think that they're good sports. I think that, you know, when somebody wrote a poem about me, even though I've done the same thing, I felt some of that. Certainly uncomfortability. Like I couldn't believe that they had said that because that's not really what happened. And it's funny because I do it all the time.
It is. It's an interesting dichotomy. It's happened to me before as well. I enjoyed how you layered that piece too with just different female voices. Do you feel like that's important to highlight that in your work?
Yeah, I think that I'm really interested in the idea of how we rise above these traumas, and I think that women's relationships are a big part of finding that kind of strength and asking ourselves what is worthwhile and what's important.
Could you take us out with a few more poems?
Sure. This is called "Till Then My Windows Ache." Today I am worn in like winter. You ask, how come? And I say, because it's raining. Not, hold on, darling, I left my thick skin back in Virginia. My last memory of you is rain, and the rain doesn't stop on a fall day in Cleveland. Under your spell, the moon electric and hell for leather, we burn down the barn, silo against the stars. Pull my hair back through the smoke, your magnetic mouth fills everything. This is called On Your Birthday. Some days I think I could let you go. The geese flying in V's, the places I want to put my tongue. These are the days I feel most like my mother. This is what she would have felt like. I feel my face become her face. No mass of revolt can stop it. I spend time imagining what our aged bodies will be like. I talk to myself in the kitchen. I narrate each spatula, each spoon. I grow obsessed with time, with creating life, and I hate this desire beating inside of me like a transplant, someone else's heart pumping blood into places it doesn't belong. This poem is called Harbor Lights. I just want a break, he says. She sits in meetings, thinks about breaking, the way people break, how water breaks against rocks. His reaction is the slow hum of a window fan. So she picks up a book, The Story of Ruth. There's more to rehab than he thought. She stares out into the harbor lights, secrets out and abuse. But in his grief, he drinks anyway. She watches each car pass from the church window. I come from decent people, she says. At least I'm here. Light orange sky, the color of melon or something blander, turns yellow and unsafe. Feels like a tornado's coming, he says. Could take the roof clear off. Someone should bring in the horses. This is called Backcountry. You need a permit, she says. He nods, considers the map and 2 weeks without poker. Bear country where packs of wolves follow their weakening prey. It's important to make noise on the trail, avoid carcasses, stream crossings are always deeper than they seem, faster, rougher. Throw me in, she says, and leave me there. You know I want to be there with you more than anything in the world, he tells her. It's just not possible. Animals die in geyser basins in the winter. She tells him their carcasses eaten by grizzlies emerging from winter dens, killed by the heat they thought would save them. This one's called Cavities. A bear decomposes in the inlet. I watch blowfly eggs, the first colonizers, hatch on a stiff carcass. Icy wind takes my breath. I think of you in spandex, cross-country skiing. The wax would have been blue today. I focus on the maggots in his nostrils, mouth, all of the openings. Soft tissue, still moist, prevents the insects from desiccating. The rotting bear smells of putrid meat, fish. I can go on like this for hours, remembering, all I want is to feel the softness of your breasts. I imagine your face wrapped in tangled hair, drowning your features, your lungs filling with water, the lake in phases of freezing, the disappointment of living through it. When you tried to kill yourself, did you cut down or across? I go to your unlocked apartment to recover belongings. A picture of us shoved into a crack of mirror. Before prison, you selling your body. The doctor's warning of kidney failure. You said it has a way of making decisions for you. I gather some clothes, a book. Your mouth cavity discolored and rotting. The salivary glands dry out and the acids ate away. I find one shoe, three socks, candy, ground teeth, and soda. The man on the couch asks me what it's like in the psych ward. I don't answer but look at him slumped over, cramped and curled into a ball. 2 years in prison isn't long enough. The night we celebrated the midnight sun, on my knees in the shower. And then I'll just finish with a poem called At the Shore. Sandpipers and sea slicked up to a lonely shore, we lick around our lips, ears to the sand, I wait for the gulls as water kisses water. In the place where it is impossible to be closer, I cannot conceive us as separate, two mouths to be pried open, anything I could give you is salt or a message crabbed in sand, you bury me. Maybe if I touch you like wind, you will end my suffering. To keep these birds waiting is certain death, their wings slicing through soft tissue organs. Their wings with each great flap become an ocean of if I were younger, I would wait with sea legs unmoved by rocking.
The poetry of Sarah Marcus. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Prosody, a weekly show featuring the work of poets and writers. Writers appearing on Prosody also have their work showcased in Chapter and Verse, a biweekly feature in Pittsburgh City Paper, the Arts Entertainment Newsweekly, published every Wednesday. Prosody is produced by Jan Beatty and Ellen Wadey. Our sound engineers are Michelle Stoner and Lisa Alexander. Please tune in Saturday mornings at 6:30 for Prosody 90.5 FM.